Chair time still going. I missed the early part where I was asking, Subhuti was asking, how many persons here are newcomers to Krishna consciousness here? Okay. I wanted to speak this evening primarily about maybe giving you a little report on the condition of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. For those of you that don't know him, his picture is on the Vyasasan, just below Srila Prabhupada, next to the impression of Prabhupada's feet there. He's in a terminal condition of illness with melanoma cancer. And there are many devotees that do know him. And I wanted to give a little report for my visit. And I think Marai Chaitanya, can you just stand up for just a second? I have a video of two Sundays ago, a lecture that he gave. It's on a CD. I'm going to give it to Marai Chaitanya. And those of you that know Bhakti Tirtha Swami would like a copy, you can request a copy from Marai Chaitanya. And in the course of a week, he'll make that arrangement to make a copy. Is that okay, Marai? And so I'm surprising him with this announcement, but he likes to glorify the Vaishnavas and serve them. In the pages of our revered scriptures, we find very amazing examples of great souls who are fixed in their consciousness upon the personality of Godhead and showing us by their example how to leave this world. The whole subject of Srimad Bhagavatam has that as a topic. Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, who is going to leave his body according to the curse of Sringi, the young Brahmin boy, that he would die in 7 days, the vicious bite of a flying poisonous serpent, so poisonous that as soon as the poison would enter his body would ignite in flames, such intense, virile poison. So Maharaj Parikshit is asking the question, how to prepare for that 7 days later moment of death? Or how can we, whether it's 7 days, 7 seconds, 7 years, 70, whatever it is, however much time, that moment will come, and what are we doing now to prepare for that moment? How to prepare for that moment of inevitable moment of death. Grandfather Bhishma, such a glorious narration, both in Mahabharata and in Srimad Bhagavatam, completely detached from the body, completely fixed in consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. He had the capacity at will, by the special benediction of Santanu, Maharaj, his father, that he could leave his body or not leave his body at will. And how he fixed his mind completely upon the personality of Godhead and returned to the spiritual world. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam shajajante kalevaram. Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita, whatever one's consciousness is fixed upon at the time of death, that state one will attain without fail. Is there any certainty for any of us seated here today that our consciousness will be fixed upon the personality of Godhead at that unknown moment? At any moment? Now? Yeah. So, in our, not just a historical, ancient time of the past, thousands of years ago, but in our current span of life, someone who began from like, something like Prahlad Maharaj, who began from a position of obscurity. Prahlad Maharaj, before he was Prahlad Maharaj, in his previous life, he was the son of a Shudra, mother and father, and his father had passed away, so he had no education, he was just engaged in menial service in his childhood. But in a very fortunate way, the menial service he was given was to assist his mother in taking care of the Bhakti Vedantas, the great sages who were staying at an inn during the rainy season. So he served them, and he heard from them, and he received their mercy. And he, through the association that he had with those saintly persons, he fixed his consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. And during that very lifetime, under their instruction, he had darshan of the personality of Godhead and left his body fixed upon the personality of Godhead and achieved a special benediction of serving Krishna in the form of Narada Muni during this day of Brahma. So these are wonderful, one might look at it as storybook descriptions. Starting from obscurity and becoming a perfected soul. When visiting Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he described what his childhood was like. There's going to be a biography. Satyaraj Prabhu was commissioned to write that biography. He was born in a ghetto situation in Cleveland, Ohio. And you know, the American success story, he was somehow accepted as a student in Princeton University and graduated with honors from Princeton University. And went on in the course of his life to become a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, to dedicate his life to Prabhupada's mission. He was describing to me that he spent 15 years in Africa, literally risking his life. He told some wild stories of what happened, rather than, because the time doesn't permit. He was risking his life on a regular basis, practically daily, life-risking situations, to fulfill the order of his spiritual master. And then, some interlude, he was part of a library party where they were placing standing orders of Prabhupada's books. He described that he went to Salt Lake City, and by Krishna's arrangement he met one of the high-ranking, I don't know what the right term is, priests, they have some special term, elders, or whatever the term is, who just wrote him a little note and said, go see these 15, 20 people. And just by showing the note, everyone cut up their checkbooks and began, because he was such a high-ranking person, This person was describing that he was aware of Srimad Bhagavatam but didn't know how to find a translation of Srimad Bhagavatam. But was so happy to have a translation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he wanted all the other members, elders under him of the Mormon faith, to read, because he took Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. Not just take out volume by volume from the library, but read it cover to cover, keep a copy in your home. Because he understood the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are so pure that it would benefit the members of the Mormon faith to read Srimad Bhagavatam. And then after going through all of America, through all of Europe, and then into Eastern Europe, risking his life, hair Sika raising stories of selling sets of Srimad Bhagavatam in someone's home, the KGB showing up the front door, dashing out the back door, hopping in a car, then screeching out and going to the next place to sell a set of Srimad Bhagavatam in somebody's home. In detail, describing these things. Risking his life. One devotee was there who was present when, during the last week of Prabhupada's life in Vrindavan, reports were coming from Europe, from America, from this place and that place about book distribution. And Prabhupada, even in that physically weak condition, was so enlivened to hear the book distribution reports. And then they got some report of, his name was before sannyas, was Ghanasham Das, had been in Eastern Europe and sold 15 sets of books in the libraries of the then behind the Iron Curtain. And Prabhupada couldn't sit up, but if he could have sat up, he would have done so. He burst out with some exclamation. This Ghanasham, Prabhupada began crying. Tears were pouring from his eyes. A black man in the communist countries, risking his life to sell the books of his spiritual master. Some expression, I owe my life to him. Some words to that effect. Maharaj describes, I've always lived on the edge. And that's what he's doing right now. Just to give a little bit of a picture, I want to go into the Srimad Bhagavatam a bit, but I just, so you get a little bit of a picture. The whole time he was lying down, because he doesn't have any strength, that the particular day that I visited, he, Vrajalila, that Mataji, who is assisting, she and her husband are assisting as his health caregivers, said that the night before he was in such pain he hadn't slept at all. Hadn't slept at all in such pain. So I was supposed to see him at 2 o'clock. She said, if it's possible, could you come right now? It was noon. I thought I was going to get a message. You know, I'm sorry, Maharaj, can't see you, or a few words. You know, I'm really wiped out, no energy. I'm so glad you came to see me, but you know, lights out. I have to rest. His energy level was at that level. But nonetheless, he invited me to come see him, and Radhanath Maharaj and Mahamuni and Vakreshwar Pandit were also there. And he started speaking. While he was speaking, he had his shirt open at the top, and he was He had his hand like this, and he was rubbing. And I didn't realize what it was, but he was holding on to one of the multiple tumors in his body. Actually, his hand was like that. And it was about the size of a tennis ball, right on his neck. Did anybody ever have a boil? Know what it's like when you have a little pressure underneath the skin and what that feels like? And he wasn't on painkillers, he was just holding that part of his body. And then basically, during one part of the conversation, he gave a little body scan of what's going on. And there was one here, a cracked but not yet broken collarbone, just lying there with a cracked collarbone. And then in both sides in this groin area, two as large as this one tumors, and a couple near his kidney. And of course, he has an amputated leg. And just to keep the circulation going, there was cold, and then hot pad, and then cold, and then a hot pad, just so that there could be some circulation. And a ozone machine, some way of bringing oxygen into the system. So he began speaking very, very slowly. You know, like somebody that is in his condition. But as he spoke, he just kept speaking, and he went on for 2.5 hours just speaking. It was a little recording. And I know him well enough to know that when he does something, he has multiple things in mind while he's doing that something. He was recording some of the history of his life for the purposes of Satyaraj biography. But he was also speaking about his preaching work, because he said that I'm one of the most active preachers in North America, traveling and presenting Krishna consciousness in so many situations. So he said, before you came, I was praying to Krishna that some words I might say that would be of value to you after I'm gone. So this is a man that's on borrowed time. I mean, he thought that he was going to be gone 3 weeks ago. The doctors told him, and he felt he was gone 3 weeks ago. But he's remaining. I'm going to save this for later. Krishna's giving him some extra service to do. Meaning, he's imparting from his deathbed messages to people that are just turning people around. I'll share some of those things with you later. I don't know what to say. He's in another realm of Krishna consciousness. He's definitely beyond the body. He's way beyond that. And he's just absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Completely absorbed. Prabhupada gives this description that at the stage of self-realization is like a coconut when it dries. The coconut inside pulls apart from the shell, and you can rattle it, and you can hear the coconut, and the coconut shell are separated. So just being in Bhakti Tirtha Swami's presence, that's easy to, you know, he's completely separated from bodily conception of life. But his mind is completely fixed in thought of Krishna. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one verse that Krishna, Sutta Goswami is describing this stage. It's the gradual stage that comes from hearing and fixing oneself in devotional service to Krishna, based upon that hearing. Vidyante vidya granti chidyante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishta evatmanishvare. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated. One sees the self as the master. Meaning, in ordinary consciousness, the dictates of the mind, the dictates of the senses, the pushings of our desires, the forces of karma, our association with the modes of nature, they're just pushing us along. Like a passenger riding in a machine that's moving a train or a car or just that the machine is moving, material energy is moving, and we're going along for the ride, identifying with it. Oh, look at the scenery. I'm having fun or I'm suffering. It's very clear that his body is suffering. It's equally clear that he's beyond identification with that condition and fixed. And it's not storybook. There he is. I gave Sunil Lamada the directions to visit because he's in New Jersey and he's going to try to also pay a visit to see, have darshan of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. So, to bring in the Srimad Bhagavatam's message a bit, I thought I would cover three verses from the seventh chapter of the Bhagavatam, the section of the Bhagavatam where Vyasadeva has received some instruction from Narada how to fix his consciousness upon the personality of Godhead, and based upon the realization that he gains, fixing his consciousness upon the Supreme Lord, to express that experience in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they're very, very important verses, actually, because they express the essence of what Srimad Bhagavatam is. Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasa's exposition on what these three verses say, what that experience was. Oh, I'll read them, so it'll help us get a Bhagavatam context of what Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is going through. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak panihate male apashat purusham purnam mayam cha tad upashrayam. So the first part is the fixing of the mind in pure devotion. Bhakti yogena manasi, fixing the mind in absolute concentrated devotion upon the Supreme Lord. Samyak means completely. Praniyate, amale. Amale means taint or impurity. Without any touch or contact with the material energy. Completely. Samyak. Praniyate, amale. Totally absorbed in nothing but samadhi upon the personality of Godhead. Then it describes, so that's the state of mind. Then what he experienced was apashat purusham purnam. He saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness. Purusham purnam. Not here, but in Jiva Goswami's commentary, he explains what that means is that he saw the spiritual world, because when you see the personality of Godhead, he's not alone. he's surrounded by his holy abode, all of his loving associates, the loving exchanges they're having with him. We used to have this phrase in ISKCON, that picture is not bona fide. And it came from the period of time when the artists were asking Prabhupada, what does Krishna look like? There's one devotee, Muralidhar, fantastic artist. So he was describing to me, Prabhupada was visiting in Boston, and so he painted like 10 different pictures and asked Prabhupada which one of them looks most like Krishna. Because he was the artist, it was his duty to do that. And Prabhupada's reply was, they're all Krishna. And then the conversation went on to other things, and Muralidhar was determined. So he wanted to, you know, he wanted to go back and ask the same question. He got the same answer. Then he got a little frustrated and he said, well, Prabhupada, supposing a child paints a stick figure and puts a peacock feather on Krishna's head and over there is Krishna's flute, is that Krishna too? And then Prabhupada repeated, there is Krishna holding his flute, peacock feather, tribhanga lalitam, shama sundaram, that is also Krishna. So he gave up the exercise of trying to extract the information from Prabhupada, what does Krishna look like most. But sometimes Prabhupada would say, you've seen those posters where it's just a Krishna's smiling face in a big cloud in the sky. And Prabhupada would say, that's not bona fide. It's not bona fide because where's the rest of Krishna's body? And more importantly, where are Krishna's devotees? Krishna's never alone. Krishna's always surrounded by his loving associates. So it became like a buzzword, a phrase. That's not bona fide, Prabhu. Taking Prabhupada's words and using it like a stick. That's not bona fide, Prabhu. Anyway. When he saw Sakshat Purusham, Purnam, he saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness, means the whole spiritual world. Imagine. We can't imagine. It's inconceivable. It must have been completely ecstatic. The whole spiritual world, and Krishna in the center, Mayam cha, along with his Maya energy, tad apashrayam, and the living entity, the Maya energy, was upashrayam, was under his shelter, upashrayam. And the living entity, he saw the living entity being freed from the clutches of Maya. The next verse explains, I'm not going to go through the Sanskrit, although it's wonderful. He says he could then understand how some living entities are captured by Maya, and some living entities are released from Maya. And he understood the mitigation process, the way of getting released, and the way of becoming covered. And he understood the feelings, the sentiment of the personality of Godhead, wanting the living entities to become released from the influence of Maya. Prabhupada would say like this, to whatever degree we want to become free from the influence of Maya, Krishna's desire for that is thousands of times more, but he doesn't interfere with our free will. But if we take one step toward Krishna, he'll take 100 steps towards us. We're just reluctant to take that one step towards Krishna. Or we think we're going to take a step towards Krishna someday, and then don't do it. But to actually, as Vyas had done, take with full surrender to the personality of Godhead, in perfect knowledge of who he was, in full concentration of the mind, bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate amale apashat purusham purnam mayam chatadapashram, fixed upon the Supreme Lord, understanding the bewildered position and the released position of the living entity, the compassionate, benevolent disposition of the Supreme Lord, wanting living entities to come to that position. He then described the glories of this loving personality and how to connect with him through the medium of devotional service, and that's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's only possible for a great personality like Vyasa to do that, right? Right? Because he's Vyasadeva and we're nobody. So Vyasadeva can do it, and it's nice to get inspired that Vyasadeva can do it and we can't do it. Right? Bhakti Tirtha Swami is showing us, no. There may be many such persons also showing us, but at this particular moment, he's in the spotlight. The degree of surrender that this devotee has to the will of Krishna is incredible. I'll share one of these little details with you. During the week before I got there, and I think it's the one that Marai Chaitanya is going to make available to people who want a copy, the theme of the present, I mean, he has no energy, so they just had to like prop him up, lean him against something and have him speak. And after he was through speaking, lay him back down again and carry him back to his room. So understand the drama of the thing and the fixed consciousness. So it's listening to Grandfather Bhishma speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira on how to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. His message was essentially that we should receive Krishna's love and give Krishna's love to others. I mentioned at the beginning of this weekend of seminars that I'm giving that this is one of the inspirations that I wanted to pass on in the course of this weekend. So this is the focus point of it. Krishna consciousness is to awaken our dormant love for Krishna. All the things that we do have that objective, to get a genuine taste for chanting the holy name. We follow sadhana, we chant our rounds on our beads, and we worship the deity and follow principles and rise early and do various behaviors. The purpose of all those things, coming together on Sundays and having sankirtan and hearing the class and taking Krishna prasadam and associating together and all the things that we do in the course of our daily lives, is to get a genuine taste, a genuine attraction, an absorption in the holy name, and ante narayana smriti, at the end of this life, go to the personality of Godhead. During this life, fix our activities in service to the Supreme Lord. That is the way of assuring that at that most crucial moment, our consciousness is in the right place. If the sequence of moments of our life are where our consciousness is in the right place. Thank you. So during this lecture, that was the message. Receiving the love that Krishna wants and giving in our relationship with others that love that Krishna has given to us. And that's Krishna consciousness. That was the theme in a very impassioned and powerful way. When the class was over, he motioned for Mahamuni Prabhu. I'm speaking like this because I'm using his name because he said it was okay to. Mahamuni, come here. You know, Mahamuni was practically in tears from hearing, because he had been away from the association of devotees for some time, and he was really, really moved. Everyone was moved. I wasn't there, but I was told half the audience was just sobbing with tears. And Mahamuni came in, so Mahamuni came over. And he doesn't have any strength, but he held up his fist and said, Mahamuni, I want to punch you in the face. Mahamuni was in shock. He said, don't think I don't mean it. I don't have the strength to do it, but I want to punch you in the face. And with seriousness, you treated me so bad. And Krishna just inspired this. There wasn't any bad treatment of Mahamuni to Bhakti Tirthaswami. There was no such thing. So why was he saying like that? You treated me so bad. I've wanted to do this for so long, but I'm too weak. Otherwise, I'd punch you right in the face. And Mahamuni was dazed. He was crying before and shocked now. What just happened? And he didn't understand it till a few days later what had happened. What happened the next morning? Then he went to where he was spending the night. And he couldn't figure it out. And then a plate of Mahaprasadam, Bhakti Tirtha Swami sent him a plate of Mahaprasadam. You know, his plate of prasadam. Mahaprasadam. He ate the whole thing, wondering what's going on. The next morning he woke up with this huge thing in his mouth, like somebody had punched him in the mouth, only it was some kind of tooth infection. And he said, wow, this Maharaj, just by his words, he could punch me in the face. And then he thought, what's going on here? And then he realized that what's going on here is Krishna just inspired Mahamuni to speak in that way because he's under Super Soul's influence somehow. The Mahamuni has this anger thing. He has an anger problem. And so the anger problem is he just gets mad at people for no reason. In his mind, there's some reason, but there's really no reason. He just gets angry. Angry. Then he has to go away from the association of devotees in an angry mood. And it takes months, sometimes a few years to get over that. Then he comes back and does wonderful service, and something happens in this anger thing. So his realization was, through Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he wanted me to get this realization. This is what I do to other people. I'm just getting back what I do to other people. Please, Krishna, take this from my heart. Not that he's never thought that thought before, but he thought it with such intensity that he really felt that it's going, perhaps gone. There's some other things that are a little on the personal side with some other people, but some other exchanges where it's very clear. I don't want to represent what those exchanges were, but he spoke in such a way, Krishna had him speak in such a way that he took some pain and some deeply held on to bad feelings from people's hearts to just throw it away and just take shelter of their service to Prabhupada and the society of devotees. And I'm sure that's just a little window of time that I was there, and I'm sure it's happening on a, if not daily basis, many times a day with different people. Krishna's just engaging him in that manner. It's like a saint in our times kind of thing. It was amazing. I mean, I know what it's like when you have one bodily, you know, a big toothache or a big boil. I mean, another thing was he said he has bed sores because he can't move, so just wherever he lies, it hurts just to lie, but he can't do anything but do that. But he was covering so many topics, and he made digression over here and came back right to the point, and complete clarity of consciousness, completely just emaciated body, smiling, joking, inspiring, fixed in Krishna consciousness. So there's a little report from Gita Nagari. And one of the things, there's many things, but one of the many things that is so inspiring is that the opportunity to become fixed in Krishna consciousness is available to anybody. It's not based upon where you're born. It's not based upon your education, your wealth, your position in society. It's not based upon any of those things. It's not spiritual attainment doesn't have a material cause. Receiving descending mercy and having the opportunity to receive and eagerly taking that opportunity to receive descending mercy with great dedication to that channel where the conduit, the source where that descending mercy is coming from, with immense gratitude. I think I'll just end with this idea. He's been writing, I've been sending to some of you the letters that he's writing, and his disposition has been, if Prabhupada, A, B, or C, or anything, X, Y, Z, if Prabhupada wants me to get back into full devotional service, he'll make the cure. If Prabhupada wants to take me to some other service, he's going to do that. If Prabhupada wants to use me this way or that way, I just want to be engaged in Prabhupada's service. Confidentially, he told one devotee that he's had a recurring dream that Tamal Krishna Maharaj has appeared in his dream. And in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's inimitable style, Bhaktitirtha Swami, come on. Prabhupada wants some service from you. Come on. Like, you know, very demanding. And so Bhaktitirtha Swami described that in his dream he was thinking, this is it. Prabhupada is calling me. I better get myself together and go. And then a thought entered his mind that just outside the room where I'm sleeping, this is what he's thinking in his dream, that some disciples are going to come in and they're not going to find me here. I better let them know that I've got to go. His thoughts went to his disciples. And then when that thought went to his disciples, Tamal Krishna Maharaj went away. And then he woke up. And so he didn't want to make too much of the dream, but then it happened again. So Prabhupada is calling him. And then he's saying to other devotees, Boy, I can't wait to see what your service is going to be when we're with Prabhupada again. I'll make a place for you. You're so dedicated to serving Prabhupada, I'm sure you'll be there with him too. I mean, it's not just, but it's not, how to say this properly, it's not just cute talk. It's his realization of that's what's going on. There's eternal position of the soul serving Krishna and the loving associates of Krishna. And just as Krishna's promise, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chaljanta ante kalevam, without a question of doubt, that's the state that one will attain without fail. The process of devotional service works for those who receive the mercy that devotional service represents. The channel is there. The message is a pure message. The deliverer of the message, our founder Acharya, is a transparent messenger. And then it's in our hand to apply ourselves very, very diligently and with great enthusiasm to that process. And by doing so, the result will consummate. The fruit of becoming fixed upon the personality of Godhead, samyak pramihate amale, beyond any material contact that's available. The opportunity, it's an equal opportunity organization here. Everyone has that chance, that facility. Please take it. And I'll try to make an arrangement to get some of the other videos of his more recent lectures and try to make them available. It's a great, for me it's a great inspiration what he's, the example he's setting, what he's, Krishna is allowing him to set as an example for all of the Vaishnavas all over the world. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Krishna Kishore Kishore ki jai. Gautam Anandi.